Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for another hour of the most scintillating hour in finance radio. That was a little redundant. Kind of messed that one up, stepped on it a little bit. But anyway, thank you guys so much for joining us again. And back doing the interviews. I haven't done an interview in a while. I don't think, have we? It's been a while. But this is one that I'm really looking forward to because we've done a lot of macroeconomics, a lot of value guys, a lot of investors. But I realized that I'd never had a professional trader. And what we mean by a professional trader, just as an overview, is that a lot of these big hedge funds or even the banks, you know, JP Morgan, not as much now after the crash because of new regulatory measures and rules and laws and things of that nature. But every bank had what we call the prop desk or a proprietary trading desk where they hired traders and they ran, and just in case you get into the industry or you're reading more, you're going to run into these terms. We'll break them down for you as always. But these traders have their own P&L, their own profit and loss. And so maybe a fund or a bank has, you know, let's say 10, 15 different traders. They will assign each guy, you know, 20, 50, 100 million bucks, whatever the case may be, to manage and trade. And the better they do, they'll feed them more money. If they go on cold streaks, they pull money away. They almost treat the traders like stocks. And these guys are the best in the world. They really are. And they get paid handsomely for it and very tough. But the interesting thing to me about traders is much like value investors, traders are born. It doesn't mean we all can't get better at trading. We have taken a lot more technical analysis into our work just because we've realized how important it is and the role it can play. But it's a fascinating worldview to look at things through the eyes of the trader because they look at things completely different. They're short-term in nature. Everybody goes, don't be a short-term investor. In general, I would say that's a phenomenal rule. Do not get out there and start trading. But it's just great to get this perspective. And the name of our guest is Tom Thornton. Like I said, he's worked at some of the biggest and best hedge funds in the world as a trader. And if he's worked in those environments, it will let you know that he really knows what he's doing. To get into perspective, Tom, along with us, was bearish for completely different reasons, but on Boeing. And the price of Boeing's stock dropping from 440, I think his report came out when Boeing was at 430 a share or something like that. But just the drop down to 300, right? That's about a 25% drop, 30% drop. Tom's trade in about 2 or 3 weeks netted him about 600%. And this is why we want to listen to these guys, because it's something about investing or certainly trading that I don't think a lot of people appreciate. That what we do, what we short, what we trade, it matters. But something that really matters, you know, as much, really, is how do you structure that trade? So if you're right, you make the maximum amount of money. If you are wrong, you lose the minimum amount of money. And ironically, what we refer to that in the industry as is risk management. What are we constantly preaching on this show? Risk management, especially for those of us that are retired. Quit looking at what the market returns. Focus on what you need to finance your retirement. Those are two very different things. And one of the biggest crimes I see, this is a little bit of a side note here, but one of the biggest crimes I see are people that are retired or close to retired. that are trying to get more of the market performance, and they're not asking themselves, wait a second, am I extending too far out on this risk curve? Am I taking too much risk? And is that risk that I'm taking on bringing into play a scenario that would damage my long-term retirement? And guys, I will not quit pounding the table on this enough. When we are close to retirement or in retirement, you have to shift your thinking. Getting 28% out of a market that's up 28% is not your priority, and it shouldn't be. Okay. What should be is managing your assets in a way that finances the rest of your life. That should be the priority. Nobody wants to hear that right now, guys. Dow's up again, 28,509 points as we speak. S&P new highs at 3223. Just remember, every uptick on this market gets us closer to a drop. I am not saying the sky is falling. I don't see a catastrophic drop happening in the near future. Doesn't mean it can't, but I don't. I think that, you know, odds are that you know, the next year could be a little rocky due to the election. But I also see a lot of momentum in this market, guys, and we could easily have another screaming year next year. So, but again, that has nothing to do with your retirement, because the drops will happen. The catastrophes will happen. And if you have a portfolio that endangers the financing of the rest of your life, you're somewhere you shouldn't be. You just are. So anyway, I think it's fascinating to listen to Tom, who does something entirely different from what we do at Bulwark. But yet a lot of the same things are at play. And this, you know, and that's not by accident. Okay. I've worked on the institutional side of things, and we wanted to take that institutional approach that, you know, the best hedge funds in the world are using, you know, some of the best investors of the world are using, and we wanted to make it retail available. That's how we've constructed Bulwark. And so I just wanted you to hear the other side of it, and I think it's a fascinating interview. And we got to cut it off short, as we do with most of our interviews, so you can catch the end of it, which I'd encourage you to do. You can catch the end of it at our podcast on mynorthwest.com, or you can go to, you know, Google Know Your Risk Radio, Stitcher, to hear the rest of Tom's views, because I think it's fascinating. But anyway, let's get to the market update. Obviously, truncated show, because we're going to air the majority of that interview, and then, like I said, you can listen to the remainder of it on the podcast. So, market update, guys, just up. I mean, everything is just up. Valuations are expanding. We are as bullish right now on indicators as we were bearish last year at the same time. And typically, again, I'm not forecasting. We're not trying to time markets and guess, you know, where they're going. But traditionally, this is when retail investors start getting the itch. This is when they start feeling bulletproof. This is where they want to step on the gas. Okay, again, don't do that. Okay, stick to the long-term plan. That's what we're doing. That's what you got to do. And, you know, what I will tell you is markets aren't going to keep going up in a straight line next year. That's not how markets work. So don't buy into the greed side of it. Don't get sucked in at highs. If you don't have a plan and you're just as euphoric as you were depressed at the end of last year, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Guys, there's a better way to do things. We don't need to do the old stock bond allocation like we've talked about. You know, we can cut your fees drastically. We can reduce your risk drastically. And most importantly, we can give you more upside. It doesn't have to be a binary outcome. There are better ways to do it. Shoot, our bond replacement strategy, we were going over year-end results with clients. Our bond replacement strategy that gives you the majority of the upside of the market that's insured against loss. And I can't give specific features, but we've got product ranges that are up anywhere from 9 to 17% this year alone. It's not a guaranteed outcome. That's a bizarre result. Those aren't average results, but it's proof that that bond replacement strategy works. You don't have to be sitting there in cash, but you also don't have to be out there in the riskiest stocks to get a really nice year. There's a better way to do things. And, you know, again, we're not, that bond replacement strategy is not competing against stocks. We're competing against bonds. But we're doing it while being insured against loss with no risk, right? And no fees. It's so underutilized. And I just encourage you guys to give us a call about that bond replacement strategy. You can also go to the website, check it out, give us a call, get the free booklet. And that's enough. Done things a little out of order here. So let's finish up on the market update here. Seeing a bid come into oil, which is interesting. Finally got oil back above 60. It's pulling back again today, but it's still remaining above 60. Signs of inflation are percolating, getting up there again. Nothing runaway. Like I said, I will keep to the same mantra. A lot of yellow lights out there on the fundamental side, not a lot of red ones. There's really nothing to say other than everything is going up. And it doesn't look like there's any signs of stopping at this point. But like I said, markets don't move in straight lines. This is not a time to be adding risk to the portfolio. Seeing some really interesting action in stocks like Boeing. Boeing continues to struggle. That's something that we've noticed. I don't know, you know, we don't really have a take on it. We're not involved. I still think it's very expensive. I do not think that anywhere close to the worst case scenario is priced into that stock. Everybody goes, oh, it's down so much, you got to buy it. No, it's not, guys. Go look at the valuation on it. It's still historically high. And there's not a there's 4,600 737 maxes are in Boeing's backlog. The backlog that has driven so much of this valuation increase. Okay, 4,600 737 maxes. Now, maybe they get it cleared. All I'm saying is more issues are coming out. More delays are being there. This is not priced in. And remember, every day that that delay happens, more people cancel the order. Okay, so it's just not getting built into the price of the stock. Another one we're keeping an eye on is Tesla. Hey, guys, this is why we said we're not going to tell you to go long. We're not going to tell you to short it. You guys know my thoughts on Tesla. Market does not care. They are making strides in the business, but they're still miles away from profitability. My feeling is this: Tesla might make it in the long run, but during the next pullback, during the next recession, they're going to get absolutely ripped. Okay. And there's a lot of questionable things going on the accounting side with that company. There are a lot of things that don't add up. If you are long Tesla, congratulations. Great call. I'm not going to recommend it one way or the other. I am just going to tell you that the valuation on that thing is insanity. All the questions still remain. Do not get sucked in, especially at these prices. My firm belief is if you want to own Tesla, you'll be able to pick it up cheaper. But as always, guys, I could be wrong. Anyway, rates are going back up. The other interesting thing about this move so far this month with markets going vertical, bonds really not, treasuries specifically, are not showing that. We'd expect rates to be moving substantially higher on treasuries. That's not really happening. Doesn't mean it can't, but it looks like this 2% mark on the 10-year is really a lot of resistance. Again, they're acting stubborn, which is not a tell. It's not a lead. It's just something we want to watch. If this really was a risk on and growth was really going to be accelerating, the bonds sure are not pricing that in. So that's something we want to keep an eye on. But anyway, for those home gamers at home, guys, you've had a phenomenal year. A little bit of a contrarian view here, but, you know, take a little risk off the table. I know that sounds crazy. Nobody wants to do that right now. We've taken a little risk off the table as of today. Still very long. Again, don't want to panic. Don't want to time it. But this is just portfolio management. Raise a little cash right now and everything is going up. Everything is shooting up. So you got some ammunition to buy lower. That's the way to play this. So anyway, without further ado, we got to get rolling. We got that interview and it's a long one and it's a good one and it's filled full of insights that I think will help you, you know, further educate yourselves as investors and see things through the eyes of a trader. So anyway, as always, guys, if you want to know about our bond replacement strategy, if you want to hear about our exchange traded fund portfolios that are very price efficient, tax efficient, you know, exchange traded funds, Vanguard, lot cheaper and typically outperform mutual funds, right? And then we've got our algorithmic management, you know, program over the top of it that's meant to, you know, hedge against catastrophic loss. It's defense. Everything we do has got a layer of defense built into it. And if you want to hear about that, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. You can go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You can request our booklet. You can email. If you don't want to call in, you can email us for a meeting or a phone consult. If you don't want to talk on the phone at all, we can do a consultation over email. You guys know the drill. We're here to help. And all we do is show you how we do things, how we substantially lower your fees, lower your risk, and increase your upside. And I decided, hey, look into it. The other thing, look at, guys, is be happy about the stock performance. Look at your overall performance. Look at your, for those of you sitting out there in the 60-40 or 70-30 typical portfolio, look at what those bonds have done. If you're still sitting on a big bond portfolio, guys, give us a call. There's a better way to do it. We can give you a product or an investment strategy that is insured against loss, that's got no fees, that's given us 50 to 60% of the market upside on average, and it's insured against loss. It's smoking bonds, guys, and it's going to continue to, especially if you think the economy is going to accelerate this year. That means rates are going to go up, which means bonds are going to get hammered. Okay? Quit focusing only on the stock side and look at that bond side of the portfolio and give us a call. We can help you out. Anyway, we got to run, and I want to get to our interview with Thomas Thornton. So have a great weekend. Merry Christmas. We'll talk to you next week. Go Hawks. And enjoy this beautiful Seattle weather. Anyway, thanks a lot for joining us today, guys. And we'll get into the interview. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, as we close out the year and look ahead to a crazy election year in 2020, what's the number one thing investors need to be aware of?
Dory, I'll tell you the same thing I told you when you and Suzanne became clients. Risk management. We're looking at 10 to 15 new prospective client portfolios every week. And I see two things. A, people are being far too cautious, or B, people aren't being nearly cautious enough. And remember, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. We can take less risk, pay far less in fees, and increase our upside potential. And our free booklet, Common Sense Investing, will show you exactly how we do that.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK or knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm's licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor. One of the biggest mistakes you can make heading into retirement is not planning for the high costs of an extended healthcare situation. Many people assume they have enough money saved only to watch everything they've worked hard for get whittled down to nothing from the ongoing costs of a long-term care situation. Do not make that mistake. By putting a long-term care plan in place, you guarantee yourself a source of funds to pay for care when needed, and you also know you will not become a burden on your family. Do what my wife and I did. Go learn about all the new long-term care plans offered by 525 Advisors. These new plans protect your savings, protect your family, and pay you back if you never use them. Learn more by attending one of the upcoming classes taught by Brian Ott, who's the host of Long-Term Care Radio right here on Cairo. Brian has a long-term care planning class coming up January 18th. Seating will be limited for this first class of the year. So sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. It's a free class. You'll get a copy of Brian's book, too. 525longtermcare.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thank you guys so much for joining us. And got our special guest with us this week, Mr. Thomas Thornton. And been following him on Twitter for a long time. Really appreciate his insights. I've actually made money on some of his insights. So I know he knows what he's doing. And he's been featured on Real Vision, worked for some of the biggest firms and hedge funds. Out there with incredible track records. And the great thing about Tom and why I wanted to have him on is we've had so many investors on the show, but we haven't had any professional traders. And that is what Tom is. That's what Tom does. So, Tom, thank you so much for joining us today, and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Well, so, Tom, I'm always fascinated to start right from the beginning. And I want to know, you know, how you started in this business, how you came up, what was it, an interest from childhood, and just kind of give us your career arc and your career path and what led, you know, the path that led you here today.
Well, okay. It's been such a smooth ride. Just kidding. Actually, it all started, my grandfather was a money manager. He did quite well, the 60s and oh, 50s, 60s and 70s. And he was a metals trader. And I always was intrigued what he did. Didn't have any clue when I was a kid. But I remember when he sold his gold over when it crossed 1,000. And he called my dad the next day. And he was upset. And he said, you know, I think I made the biggest mistake of my life. But as it turned out, he had great timing. Gold peaked right after that. And so for me, I was always interested. And he always would send the Kiplinger newsletter, the head stock information, economic information. And for whatever, he'd send it to my dad, and my dad would read it. And for whatever reason, I would pick it up and start reading. And I was a kid reading it. I didn't know everything. But I just was fascinated by news and how markets worked and politics. And my grandfather passed away in the mid-80s, and I was in college, and I found myself as an intern at Drexel Burnham, and I had no idea what the markets were doing, and I gave my money. I got $10,000 from my grandfather or my grandmother after my grandfather passed away, just to, you know, have, and I gave it to this broker there, and he's like, oh, I've got the perfect idea. And he put the whole 10,000, this is August of 2000, 1987.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm 54, by the way. he put it all in puts on some biotech company. My mom's in it, he told me. I was like, oh, okay, cool, whatever. I didn't even know what puts were. They were out of the money puts. And like within like 3 weeks, I looked at the account and it was around $5,000.
Oh.
I was like, hey, what's going on? He's like, oh, you know, it's going to be fine. The drug's not going to get approved and the stock's going to go down and you're going to make a ton of money. And I was like, okay. He goes, well, do you have any more money you could put into it? You know, I was like, oh God. So as it turned out, the crash happened and the puts turned out to be, you know, a home run. And I, you know, we cashed out of them and I was hooked. I was like, okay, I can do this. And they went up like 10x, which was just crazy for some guy and as an intern in college. So it worked out great. I was kind of stuck and said, I like this. And so I really started to dig more into it. As I graduated and I got a job in the 90s, I didn't initially go into it right out of college, but I got a job working with a high net worth retail group in Beverly Hills, California. And they covered, you know, a lot of entertainment people. And they also had a group of people that that managed hedge funds. So I was the kid on the desk that took the trades for the hedge funds. And they were, it was sort of like a middle markets type of business that they had. And to make a long story short, into 2000, I left the firm I worked for, Morgan Stanley, and went to a client. And I was the head trader for two hedge funds that they had. And it was sort of a eye-opening experience. I knew a lot about trading, but when you're really moving things around very, very quickly, and we had the firm had $15 billion, the hedge funds had $1 billion. So I was a head trader whipping a lot of stuff around. And in 2000, the volatility in the market was just extreme. And it was great. It was really fun. We traded a lot of technology, a lot of biotech, internet stocks. And if you weren't there then, you really can't imagine just how volatile those stocks were on the upside and downside. It really, you can look at Tesla and say, oh, you know, Tesla's going up a lot in the last month. You had that happening like weekly on 20 stocks and trying to get out of stocks too. If you were long a stock, I could tell you, it took me, I moved, 3Com about 10% from 100 down to 90, in a day trying to get out of it.
Wow.
And it was just brutal. The liquidity was tough then. And, you know, I've also grown in the markets with, technology. And when I first started, there was no internet, and you had Quotrons, and that was it. And you read the newspaper for end of the day pricing.
Yep.
So the interesting thing is that through the years, technology has changed everything, and it's changed the way we interact with brokers. It's changed the way we transact. It's made people it's given the people the ability to do anything they want on their phones. And it's just incredible to me. Now there's no commissions on with a lot of brokerage firms, yep. And I think that's going to change the future as well. So I'm at that hedge fund, and it's 2000, and the head of the firm, CIO, who hired me, he got brain cancer, and the firm basically imploded with the tech bubble bursting. And without some real good leadership. And I ended up launching my own fund with another partner from the firm. And we did that for 2 years. And it was just really difficult to raise money, especially being in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
I got recruited. My partner and I, his wife was having a baby. And he's like, look, I got to make money. So he ended up going back to a mutual fund. And I ended up getting recruited to come to Connecticut, Greenwich, Connecticut, to work for a firm called Lovell Global. And Lovell was a firm founded by David Ganick, who was an SAC rainmaker with Steve Cohen. And that, if I thought I knew anything about trading, I learned everything from working at Lovell. And we were there, we were in business from 2002 to 2011, and we ended up, the sordid story of it is at the end, we were caught up in the expert network scandal that Steve, they were trying to get Steve Cohen, top, you know, front page news of the news, New York Times, and that was just a complete mess. I mean, when you get into your elevator in the morning in New York City, and you got your Starbucks in your hand, and you get in there, and all of a sudden, two FBI agents with their jackets and hats are on. You know, they push 17, and they look at you, and they say, what floor? And I'm like, 17. I'm like, okay. But as it turned out, I had nothing to do with it. It was more or less a witch hunt, and the founders of the firm, or one of the founders, not David, he was exonerated fully, is that we had no insider trading in our firm. But the damage was done, and I had to move on. And I ended up managing a family office for the founder. And then I had this idea of putting out the research to the public that I did for years when I was at Lovell and at the family office. And my view, it turned out to be called hedge fund telemetry. And the hedge fund telemetry, telemetry is the study of data being transmitted wirelessly to you from all different places with all different types of inputs. And I'm a big Formula One racing fan. And in the early 90s, the Formula One teams, they started putting sensors on every component of their cars. And when they would go around the track, data would be transferred to the computers, and when they come back around the next time, they'd say, hey, you know, Ayrton, you know, lay off your brake balance, or, you know, lay off your gas, you know, fuel mileage, or your brakes are hot, you know, so and so. And that's how I looked at the markets when I was at Lovell. I would get so much info coming in at 5:30 in the morning. I'd have to, you know, crunch it down and see what's most important for our portfolio. And I would transmit that out back to our analysts and portfolio managers. And then we would, you know, make changes on our portfolio. And I was a senior trader on the desk at Lovell. And I traded personally well over a billion shares myself every year. And that's a lot of 25,000, 50,000, 100,000 share lots all day. And it was exciting, thrilling, terrifying. frustrating at times, but it really was an education that I can't believe I was so fortunate to have.
Well, I think the
the experience you had at Level working. So were you guys, would the best way to be describe it then, Tom, were you guys like a feeder fund for SAC Capital or what? What was the relationship?
Well, actually, David and Anthony, the two founders, left SAC. It wasn't necessarily a SAC spinoff at all. Actually, Steve was, I think, sort of upset about David leaving. But David was just a super trader. Anthony was just like a computer as the head of research. And so we launched our own. It was completely separate of SAC. We had really no communication with them at all. And I've met Steve in the past. I've actually, you know, I almost worked for him a few times. Just a really super guy, maybe one of the better traders in our entire generation.
Right, right. Well, that's the thing about the way, and you know, this always happens. And I was curious to talk to you about it because, you know, you look at the run that SAC had, and to think that that was, you know, that was all insider trading or all this or that, it's ridiculous. And the track record that Steve Cohen had and the SAC Capital has, I feel like for me, it's gotten way overlooked. I mean, what did they compound? I mean, they were putting up for years and years and years before, you know, or before that scandal, you know, ever even came into purview. And like you said, there were so many other players involved. I think Steve was kind of, from my perspective, and you can certainly, you know, miles more about it than I do, but it looked to me like they just wanted to put a big name and get a skin on the wall, and he happened to, his number came up.
You know, I looking back at everything, I think that a lot of funds were, you know, flying a little close to the sun.
Gotcha.
When it came to information. And I don't think it was just, you know, one particular hedge fund. I think there were a lot of brokerage firms and sell side firms, Citibank or Morgan Stanley's analysts would be, you know, really trying to get as much information and an edge to show people that they had something. And I think SAC, I think Steve really did not necessarily need inside information. I think there was probably, I think he's just an incredible tape reader. And I can tell you from our point of view, you know, we had some very aggressive analysts that would dig deep on channel checks and do so much more than the average analyst does today. But there was really no insider trading, you know, nefarious type of plan that was happening at our firm.
Right.
I really can't speak about SAC since I wasn't there, but you know, I've heard the stories about some of the biotech stuff they had, and that sounds a little, you know, questionable to me.
Right.
So I would say Steve, if he was left alone with his computer with without any information, he could trade off the chart pretty well, better than anybody.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so fascinating trek there. That's why I always like to hear the stories of how it begins, because if we choose to beat ourselves and torture ourselves in this profession, I found that there's usually a tie to childhood, and so you certainly back that up. Now, one of the things that you do that I find fascinating, because I am more of a fundamental side, and for those of you just joining, we're talking to Tom Thornton, the head of Hedge Fund Telemetry, a research company providing some of the best research that is the type of research you're getting at the, you know, at the best hedge funds in the world. So this is not like a Motley Fool newsletter. This is the top research done from the very best people. And Tom, one thing that you use exclusively, again, coming from the fundamental side, it's fascinating to me. And this cycle that we're currently in has drugged me kicking and screaming to pay much more attention to the technical side of things, and you are all over the technical side of things. Was that an evolution, or did you naturally gravitate that? And I know that you are very into the DeMarc signals. So first, How did that evolution, did that just make sense to you? Was it just kind of a natural draw to the technical side of it? And then explain to us how the DeMarc signals came in and why that became such a staple of how you look at the world.
Okay. Actually, this is a really good good question, and I hope I can answer it fully, because I think that it's really important for any trader at any level to develop their own process. Mm. And you're going to, through the ages of being a trader or an investor, you have to find what works for you, and you're going to find different types of analysis that you find valuable, which goes with your time frame, your risk tolerance. And for me, I was fascinated with when I was actually was it it was Lehman Brothers. I was at the firm in the early 90s or mid almost mid 90s before they merged with Smith Barney, and I loved their fundamental stuff, but I was fascinated by some of the technical stuff that called more precisely the tops and bottoms that we were all looking for. And again, there was no internet here, and we had like very rudimentary, stupid charts that were on our computers. And, you know, we had like little, 10-inch screens on our desk, and that's quite different. I mean, I'm sitting in front of three 34-inch curved monitors in front of me now, and I feel like I need one more.
Yeah.
But the point is that I started looking, I just would scroll through numbers and track patterns of numbers. And I can do that faster than even looking at a chart. And so I started to do that, there was a guy named Alan Shaw and Luis Yamada and a few others at the Lehman Brothers and Smith Barney at the time that really were influential. And I learned a lot about technical analysis, and I started looking at point and figure with Dorsey Wright. So I look at that stuff on occasion. Then as it grew into the later part of the 90s, I have to say the Dorsey Wright point and figure stuff was really instrumental in analyzing risk reward on a lot of different things. It's slower paced, but it really found substantial tops and bottoms. I mean, notably, the low in 1998, after the market got just mauled, I mean, killed on the long-term capital debacle, that was one of the best indicators that Dorsey Wright ever had. It was like the percentage of stocks that were in a bullish column was zero. And I thought, it can't get worse than this. So I started buying a ton. But anyway, going into 2000, when I was at the hedge fund, the first hedge fund, I met a guy named Rick Bensinger. Rick Bensinger is notable now. He's also on Real Vision. I see him every once in a while. And he worked for Bloomberg, and he came into our office one day and he said, "Hey, I got this, I got the DeMarc indicator." So he was the DeMarc rep that was going around the country, and I started using them. And I really started to get into how they worked. And I met Tom DeMarc several times. And I've just since then, I think I've used them, almost 20 years now. I just thought about that. They're really sophisticated indicators. I'm a big, big fan of what Tom has done. I think he has well over 100 different indicators. And there's all little variants of all the indicators that I don't even get. And he's a bit of a beautiful mind type of guy, where back in the 70s, late 70s, he would go on paper and chart by hand his indicators.
Jeez.
And, I can't imagine what his family thought he was doing. It must have been like in like Close Encounters when they were building, those mountains in their, in their houses. Like, what are they thinking? But as it turned out, he got it all on computers and it worked. And it's really been instrumental for me and a lot of other traders. And Steve Cohen, John Burbank, a lot of other, you know, big hedge fund people use the indicators all the time. I will say I think there's a very well-known Bitcoin bull that's starting to use the indicators as well. And I'm right now I'm starting to get a little bullish on Bitcoin. I don't really trade Bitcoin, but I've made some really good calls on tops and bottoms with it. So the DeMarc indicators and the main ones that Tom developed, they're designed to assist the user with buying into weakness and selling into strength to anticipate a trend exhaustion. And we're not going to get into the entire detail of how they all work, but that's the gist of it. You can, when you see a certain number at a high, and let's say it's a 13, which is the number that a lot of people look for. It's a 13th day. You can sell into that at the high. And if it's on the low end, if it's going down, you can buy into it. Now, most people will say, you know, you don't want to sell into, you know, an all-time high. Now, Tesla today has a DeMarc sequential 13. And it's hitting an all-time high today. It's over $400. And exactly on the day of the spike when Elon tweeted out that funding was secured, there was also a 13 on the upside on a daily and weekly. We don't have the weekly this time, but the daily to me is saying it's a sell at this level here. It's worked really well overall on markets. It's worked well on economic data. I also track it on, believe it or not, political polls that are interesting. So I can tell you that back in 2016, in August, I put out a note on hedge fund telemetry that went to some people that basically I said, hey, I think Trump might have a shot here. Because the DeMarc indicators, he was increasing, and Hillary had peaked in August. And I had no clue that they would be as accurate as it was, but it really worked. And so I'm tracking all the Democratic candidates today as well. So it's the other thing is that's crazy is Elizabeth Warren peaked about 6 weeks ago. And maybe it was about 2 months ago, but it was a perfect 13 on the top for her, and now she's come back down. It's still a long way from the Democratic nomination, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But Tom's work has been influential in many, many ways. I am one of the biggest advocates for his work, and on my site, Hedge Fund Telemetry, I offer our clients one of the best books written on the DeMarc indicators so they can understand how they work and read when they're reading the charts on hedge fund telemetry, they can decipher what the heck we're talking about.
It almost sounds like, I'm glad we got to have this discussion because I've had questions about it, but it almost sounds like a Fibonacci type thing. This is not an exclusive market type indicator. This you can. I had no idea, but you can lay this over elections, right? I mean, is it like a Fibonacci thing? Is it, what is it looking for? Just generally speaking, without getting into the weeds, but why is it that is it trying to numerically model human behavior or what is the engine that's making that go? Why is it so transferable to all kind of data sets?
Well, there is a bit of a Fibonacci number rule to it since they're using a 13. But it's just the crazy thing is Tom thought originally that the day 12 would be the day. And he studied it. This is a man that I think sleeps maybe 3 hours a night and he studies all night. And he just found that the 13 worked better and he's gone through it countless times. And it just has worked. Now, here's the other thing. I like to tell people this as well. Not the DeMarc stuff does not always work.
Right.
But when it doesn't work, and let's say the trend exhaustion does not occur, it's telling you a very important thing as well. And it's telling you that the trend that's happening right now is exceptionally strong, stronger than you think. And that's why you can get out of your trade fast and move on, or just cover if you're, you know, if you're shorting the market and it goes past a certain level, you can determine and say, hey, I'm wrong here and the indicators are wrong. The difference is when the DeMarc indicators are right, they're really right. And I can say that the other thing that I use besides the DeMarc indicators, I like to use indicators and different things that have no correlation with each other. And I look at market sentiment, and I use all of the different market sentiment polls out there. The one that I find really actionable is from Jake Bernstein. And Jake Bernstein is at tradefutures.com. Now, Jake puts out daily sentiment index on 45 different markets, stocks, bonds, currencies, and commodities. Now, I've used his work for a long time. I will say that it comes out, Jake puts it out every day. He asks common traders, are you bullish or bearish? And you get a percentage. So, for example, right now, the S&P bullish sentiment is at 82%. When it's above 82% or even higher, let's say it gets to 90%, that's an extreme level right now. It works very similar and tracks similar to the CNN Fear and Greed Index, which I really like as well.
Yeah,
I would say that if anybody needs something that's free, that they can look at every day, the CNN Fear and Greed Index is what people are doing, what traders are doing, rather than what they're saying they're doing. So I use a lot of these different indicators together. And the reason I do that is I was at Level, I was the point man for Ned Davis Research. Ned Davis Research is in Florida, and Ned Davis in the 70s created a bullish sentiment index, and he used different models that he brought in. And in the late 80s and 90s, he incorporated the DSI info. He also has the Investors Intelligence. And I've met all those people too. I was the sentiment guy at Level, and I would go around and find out every single thing, why they had the indicators working or the sentiment pools working at certain times. Like the Investors Intelligence data, which is the poll of newsletter writers, that is asking, or that they, it's sort of subjective because they will get a certain amount of newsletter writers that they have found, and then they will determine if they're bullish or bearish or neutral. And that's worked well, but it has about a 1.5 week lag. Now the AAII data, which a lot of people use, I don't use that much. And the reason is because they tend to ask people, are you bullish, bearish, or neutral? And I think when you ask someone if they're neutral, that's a cop out. That's a way of saying, you know, I just don't think I want to answer this or be wrong.
Right.
And I think that's I think that is not accurate. And because, you know, here's the thing. If going back to working at my hedge fund, if my PM would say, hey, are you bullish or bearish on Apple? I just am sort of neutral. It would be a screaming fest right at me. What are you thinking? Come up with an answer. Are you bullish or bearish? We're not here to like be in cash. And so it really forces people to like have an opinion. And I'd rather have people be wrong and have an opinion than right. And the other thing is, like, okay, so here's an interesting thing. So today, and I guess we're going to segue into what's going on in today's market. The fear and greed hit 92% bulls. That's high. That's really high. That's one of the highest readings I've seen in years.
Yeah.
Year ago, did you see it? Was it 5 a year ago?
Yeah.
And the daily sentiment index was at 4 on December 24th. And I was a raging bear in Q3 2018 because I had upside DeMarc signals, sentiment was elevated, and when everything came down, I covered everything probably about a week early. I'm a little early on things. That tends to be my my downfall. I'm a little early on things.
You but and me both,
I held on and I said, look, just, you know, this is going to be a great buying opportunity. It's low risk right now to buy. And people were thinking, Tom's absolutely lost it. And last year, you know, there were so many signals and just things that if people remember, you know, on CNBC, I recorded it because I thought it was so extraordinary. Charles Schwab was running a commercial on how to short stocks at the freaking low. I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like so easy.
Yeah, that's one of those gift indicators. Hey, we got to – so, Tom, stick with us. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. And I want to finish that discussion about what happened at the end of last year and then how it transitioned. And then I also want to get into a conversation about Boeing because that was an incredible call you had, and it's especially prescient for us here because – you know, I'm calling you from Seattle, Boeing Central. So we're going to get into that as soon as we come back. So stick with us and listen to the rest of the interview we've got with Tom Thornton here. And we will be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, as we close out the year and look ahead to a crazy election year in 2020, what's the number one thing investors need to be aware of?
Dory, I'll tell you the same thing I told you when you and Suzanne became clients. Risk management. We're looking at 10 to 15 new prospective client portfolios every week. And I see two things. A, people are being far too cautious. Or B, people aren't being nearly cautious enough. And remember, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. We can take less risk, pay far less in fees, and increase our upside potential. And our free booklet, Common Sense Investing, will show you exactly how we do that.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK or knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm's licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thank you guys for joining us and sticking with us during the break. We are back with Tom Thornton, the founder and director, head man at Hedge Fund Telemetry, a market research service that provides research for traders, hedge funds. And like we said in the intro, this is not a Motley Fool newsletter. This is hardcore data, trend research. And Tom has been in a successful trader in some of the most competitive environments and some of the most successful firms. So pleased to have you with us, Tom, and jump right back into our conversation we were having, because you and I were in a similar spot at the end of last year. We held up pretty well, thanks to a substantial short position we had in our actively managed portfolio. You talked about a fear and greed indicator that came out, and it's funny because that exact same indicator, watching CNBC, is what made me flip. Now, I didn't go substantially long, but my timing was lucky, but we sold our short, our substantial short position about 30 minutes before the close on Christmas Eve.
You covered your short that was pretty fortuitous.
Well, fantastic. You and I both know when you do it like that. I mean, and I told clients this, I go, look, we did it for the right reasons. The timing was purely luck. And now there were some other thoughts because I had heard you and I'd heard a couple other guys, you know, referencing how low volume was in the week between Christmas and New Year's. And I was concerned about buybacks. And I just thought, well, and you knew, I mean, on the short side,
I mean, it was like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, you couldn't, I mean, you know, I was watching our position go up 3-5% a day. And it was fantastic. And I just said, look, nothing happens in a straight line. Take your win and sit on the sideline and see what happens. So, I remember that index. Now, what the difference between you and I is I only picked up two stocks that next week. I was too timid looking back on it, where you flipped and you went back the other way. So how did that, you know, obviously that's done great this so far this year. Where are we at now in comparison? We're extreme bull, like you were talking about on the fear and greed index and on the DeMarc side of things. What is your outlook right now? What do you see? What are you watching out for? I mean, I'm watching this market just, it feels very reminiscent to the run-up in late 2017, right before the vol implosion. It's just incessant buying. It's like panic buying. What are you reading and what are you looking at? What are you seeing? What issues do you potentially see? Kind of give us your breakdown of where we're at today.
Okay, so let's just, you know, take a step back. You have a market right now that if you turn on TV, CNBC or Bloomberg, or read, they talk about what the market has done year to date, and it's had an extraordinary year. But the S&P dropped 19.6% in the fourth quarter last year, and if you measured from that low to the December low exactly. To now, it's up 37%.
Right.
It's pretty amazing. Now, if you go and you say, hey, well, where is it from the high of, I think it was September.
Yep.
Of September, October of 18, you're up 8.6%. So it's a pretty, you know, 8.6% is a pretty average year. So the thing that people are doing right now is they're really becoming panicky on the upside and thinking, oh, I got to get in. I'm going to miss this. Now, I'm happy to miss downside when I'm short if I cover too early, and I'm happy to miss some upside if I start to bail out a little early when my indicators get stretched like this. And I'm actually, truth be told, I'm a little underwater on some shorts, on index shorts, and it's actually been okay with some dispersion on some shorts that I've had, like I'm short Roku, I'm short Boeing, short a couple other things out there. And I'm starting to add, you know, some of the larger cap names. I'm short Apple, I'm short Microsoft, partly because nobody else is short these stocks. And so I'm, and really it's true. I look at short interest. That's another little tool I use.
Yep.
And I also look at Elliott Wave. Now, I'm not necessarily a true Elliott Wave aficionado that, you know, measures the Fibonacci retracement levels, but I use the DeMarc version of Elliott Wave, and it's called TD Wave. And instead of it having to, there's some changes there that I have, like Todd Gordon and other traders that hit me up every once in a while and say, I have no idea what you're talking about. You're wrong here. But this is what the DeMarc stuff does. It measures, you get each wave by a certain number of highs.
All right. Unfortunately, due to timing constraints, we've got to cut it off here. But as always, guys, you can catch the remainder of this interview in our podcast at mynorthwest.com or just Google Know Your Risk Radio Stitcher. Stitcher is a podcast page that carries the show. I'd encourage you to listen to the rest of the interview because Tom is really the first professional trader that we've had on, and I think his insights are really valuable. We focus a lot on economics and global, you know, investment theory and value analysis and things like that, but guys, professional traders exist for a reason, because it works, and there are guys out there that are excellent at it, and Tom has worked at some of the best hedge funds and for some of the best hedge fund managers in the world. And he really knows his stuff. So it kind of gets you inside the mind of a professional trader. So I hope you guys all enjoy it. And like I said, catch the rest of the show on the podcast page. And until then, have a wonderful weekend. As always, go Hawks. And we'll be back next week. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.